Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. If you had $145 billion on hand, you'd spend some of it, right? Well, if you're Apple, not quite. This week, the company sold $17 billion worth of bonds, and it's going to use that money as part of a plan to give back $100 billion to its shareholders. Essentially, Apple would rather use its credit card and take on debt than use all that money that it has sitting in the bank. And a big reason for this is our corporate tax structure. Joining me is Joe Nocera with The New York Times and Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine. And Joe, why is Apple issuing this debt when it has so much money available to it?
Well, the answer is pretty simple. Much of that cash resides overseas. And under U.S. law, to bring it back to the United States would require paying U.S. taxes on it. And almost as a matter of dogma, corporations are loath to do that. They don't do that. And so billions and billions of dollars resides overseas. And from Apple's point of view, it's cheaper and it makes more sense to issue debt rather than repatriate that money back to the U.S.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And the other thing that's very interesting about this to me is just how much cash tech companies and financial companies and firms that basically make their money from intellectual property hold overseas, because it's very, very easy under the tax code to say, take a patent that maybe was dreamed up by an engineer in San Jose and say, well, that patent actually lives in Luxembourg or in Singapore. That's extremely easy to do when you're working in that kind of a firm.
I mean, you're basically saying that the tax department of some of these companies is a profit generator in
some regards.
Absolutely
it is. That's, in fact,
And the companies don't make any bones about it. General Electric famously has a 1,000-person tax department whose job is to basically find ways to minimize their taxes, which they do actually quite brilliantly.
What are the consequences when these institutions don't bring this money back to the United States? I mean, how important is it that these profits are repatriated?
So there's two issues, Charlie, that Washington has really been grappling with around this. The first is, should they do a one-time only tax break to allow companies to bring this money back home? Now, they've done this before, and the deal was they were supposed to use the money to create jobs, and basically that didn't happen. So there is a lot of skepticism about whether they should give another break to bring this money back.
Yeah, they paid it in dividends, by the way.
That's right. And so then the second issue is the larger issue of corporate tax reform. It is, interestingly, one of the very few things that Democrats and Republicans tend to agree on, which is that the U.S. corporate tax rate is much higher than it is in the rest of the world, and we would be better served with a lower tax rate with fewer loopholes. So what's happened? Already this month, really, companies are saying, yeah, we want a corporate tax rate, but, oh, we don't want to lose those loopholes. And so the lobbying for the loopholes has already begun, at which point you say, well, what's the point of having a lower corporate tax rate?
You know, the OECD, which represents the world's rich countries, is actually got a big initiative going on to try and come up with some kind of international code, because basically otherwise you have a zero-sum game. You know, no country, particularly when growth is still as slow as it is, wants to lose jobs. They don't want companies to relocate or put operations elsewhere. So everybody's in a race to the bottom. You can see that in Ireland, where they've got a 12.5% rate, and there's been a number of articles in the press recently about just how geared that is to corporations and how little it does for the public.
Well, let me propose a very simple solution. What if the SEC were to require that companies, publicly traded companies, had to disclose this is the actual tax rate that we paid? What sort of impact do you think that would have?
Love it. Love transparency. I mean, I love a number in a bright color on somebody's website that says, you know, we are paying 11%.
I mean, Joe, isn't that part of the problem, that we don't really know what corporations pay because there are so many loopholes, there's so many ways to play with the tax code?
That's true, Charlie, but think about this. If you did have that transparency, which I'm always in favor of as well, you know, you'd have two different audiences looking at it. One audience would be the people who basically believe that corporations don't pay enough taxes and who are outraged. The other audience would be shareholders who'd say, boy, oh boy, what a great job you did this year. You only paid 10% taxes. Keep it up. We're going to give you a bonus.
You know, one thing we should remember, too, is ultimately companies want to put money and jobs where there is growth. They want to be in the fastest growing markets.
So we have a little bit of a trade-off here. We might be able to lower the corporate tax rate, but we'd have to close a lot of the loopholes. But one man's loophole is another man's. I have to have this to be able to create jobs, to build factories. So do we think there's any likelihood that we will see in the months ahead, as Congress and the White House discuss this, any reform of the tax code?
I think we're going to wind up with the worst of all possible worlds. We're going to wind up with a lower corporate tax rate, but I think we're also going to wind up with all the loopholes preserved because the lobbies are powerful. And if that happens, it really violates the whole notion of tax reform, and yet that seems to me the most likely outcome.
Oh, man. You know, I don't want to be a pessimist, but I think Joe's probably right. I do hope that the increasing public pressure, though, around companies that basically get to take all the benefits of globalization and really not deal with any of the costs, I hope that continues to rise because something's got to give here.
Well, finally, let's take a look ahead to some of the stories we're watching. Rana, what's on your radar?
Well, I'm going to be looking at the jobs numbers coming out later today, and in particular, what the sequester impact has been. You know, what is the public sector jobs picture looking like? Because if you remember the most recently released GDP figures, it was really the public sector that was pulling everything down. You know, those were
government lower spending.
Government spending, or lack thereof, we should say. They were much lower than we expected, basically because the brakes are on public spending. If you strip out public spending out of growth right now, the economy is actually growing faster than 3%. It's about 3.1%. So clearly, it's not like you need a ton of government spending, but you can't have the kind of cuts that we're having and stay in a 3% economy. And I think that also goes to the austerity debate that's been going on over the last few weeks. Some of the research around that has been debunked, and I think people are starting to look more closely at whether or not cuts are what you need to stimulate growth.
Joe?
Well, I'm looking at this Saturday's annual, as he likes to call it, capitalism's Woodstock. Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway is having its annual meeting. There will be tens upon thousands of people there. It is informative. It is hilarious. It lasts forever as Warren and his partner, Charlie Munger, do their Laurel and Hardy routine.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org/business. And you can take this program with you as a podcast available on iTunes. Joan O'Sara with The New York Times and Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine. Thank you for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.